There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass,
or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome once again to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror.
Really?
Come in. I was just going through some of my old preserved specimens, huh? If you like martinis with olives, you should try them with these eyeballs. Wow! Yes, they were from an old cross-eyed professor who was fired because he could never control his pupils, huh?
Really?
Now, here's a mystery. They say alcohol's bad for the liver, but this liver's been in alcohol for years and looks great. Cheers!
Really?
Oh, but this is my favorite. Just plain, unsalted skin. You'll be amazed how addictive it is. I couldn't enjoy anything until I've had my pound of flesh. But I like to know where my flesh comes from. You never know what they'll try to slough off on you. Some merchants, they just pay too much for skins.
For skins?
No, really, though. We've got three tales for you tonight, including Inner Sanctum's Till Death Do Us Part, and Suspense with Ed McMurray and Train Robbery. But first, it's time for the Shadow Return, so scary!
Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. The Shadow uses his hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice of the Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Shadow Returns.
A situation has arisen that's causing shipping great concern. It's in the hope you shipmasters may be able to offer some solution or explanation that you've been called here. Mr. Kentschner has come from the Washington office to acquaint you with the facts. Gentlemen, Mr. Kentschner.
Thank you, Commodore. Gentlemen, during the past few months, we've been getting reports of an alarming series of strange accidents aboard incoming ships. Out of 60 ships that have tied up at this port recently, some 50 crew members have been put in hospitals for infections in arms, legs, and shoulders.
Well,
really, gentlemen. And 15 seamen have either lost a leg or an arm in the past few months. Really, it's true, gentlemen. And in addition, 4 have died as a result of their injuries.
Have you any idea of the cause? Any clue at all?
The only thing we're sure of, Commodore, is that unless something can be done at once, there are men on the sea right now who lose an arm, a leg, or maybe their lives.
You men can leave my office and report to your stations.
Okay,
your physical examination's okay for sailing. Payne.
Yes, Dr. Bedlow?
Stay here.
Yes, sir.
I'll have to do something about that arm of yours.
Victor.
Yes, Johnson?
If this doctor want to fool with your arm, you not let him.
Don't let him? What do you mean?
I sailed with him before. Many time. You let him do something, you be sorry. You remember what they tell you?
What are you waiting for, Johnson?
Hey, go now, doctor. Don't forget what they tell you.
Gosh, I don't know what to do.
All right, Payne. Now we'll take care of you. Where'd you get this vaccination?
Well, I got it in Harvard. I went to that doctor you told me about.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten. Well, you've got a bit of an infection. Place your arm on the table.
Oh, listen, Doc. I don't want to go home to my mother with my arm all tied up. She'd be scared to death.
Now, look here, Payne. I can't force you to submit to treatment. But if you disregard my advice, I'll have your name stricken from the crew roster.
Oh, no. No, you see, this is my first voyage. Well, I want to make good.
Well, it's up to you. What do you want to do? I can't waste all day with you.
Well, all right, go ahead.
This won't hurt. Steady down.
All right. Shoot. Oh, stop. Doc, stop.
Fainted, eh? A very effective anesthetic. Now, Victor Payne, we'll perform a real operation.
Lamont, you look tired. What's the matter?
Oh, I want to get a rest from the rest I've had on this ship.
Oh, Lamont, it's been fun.
Fun is right. I've never had so much fun thrust upon me in such large doses in all my life.
Oh, you mean the cruise director.
I mean the cruise director. That voice of his will haunt me for the rest of my days. Having fun this morning, Mr. Cranston. Join the deck games, Mr. Cranston. They're fun. Play bridge, Mr. Cranston. It's loads of fun. Be sure to come to the dance tonight, Mr. Cranston.
It's going to be fun, yes, I know. Say, look, Lamont.
Yeah, what's the matter?
In the stern of the ship, that group of seamen... They've been gathering in little knots like that for the last few days. What do you suppose it means?
Maybe they're planning to get the cruise director.
Oh, no, seriously, Lamont. I don't like it.
Look, there's Captain Blair running down from the bridge. Come along, Margo. Let's walk back and see what it's all about.
Well, not too close, Lamont.
Don't worry, Margo. Well, I don't like the look of this.
Give me the rig. Yeah, let me go. I say, let me go.
Break you, Dick.
Hey, what's that?
Here,
what's going on here?
You, Johnson, stop that.
Get
right there.
All
right, come here. Now, what's the meaning of this? Dr. Bedlow.
Yes, Captain.
What happened? Why did this man strike you?
I'm sure I don't know. I came out of my cabin and he jumped on me.
You go below, skipper. You look at young Payne. Then you know why I hit him.
Victor Payne, the cabin boy? What's wrong with him?
If he don't get the proper medical attention right soon, skipper, the lad'll lose his arm.
He's been lying in his bunk screaming with pain for 2 days, and his sawbones won't do anything for him.
What does this mean, doctor? What happened to the cabin boy?
He was vaccinated and half infection set in. His arm is swollen a bit.
A bit? His arms swell big like 2 arms.
What have you done for the boy, doctor?
All I could. An operation, but we haven't the facilities aboard. We get to port tomorrow, I'll take him to a sanatorium where I can do the job right.
It'll be all right to wait. I mean, there's no great danger?
No, sir.
Very well. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
This is a serious offense striking your ship's officer. I can't let it pass. You'll have a hearing later. In the meantime, Matthews.
Aye, sir.
Put this man in irons.
Put him in irons.
Put him in irons.
All right, Johnson, come on.
You can put me in iron now. But I get that fellow later. I'll fix him.
All right. All right, now the rest of you. Get back to your post. Go on now.
Come on. Put
Johnson
in irons.
Boy, he was right. Margo, let's go below and see this cabin boy. The one they say has such a bad arm.
Do you think there's some truth to what the men say?
I don't know, Margo. They may exaggerate, but I've always inclined to the belief that too many men can't be too far wrong.
Well, you ain't got much farther to go, sir. You got young Payne bunked at the bottom of these stairs.
I see. Well, this is certainly no place for a sick boy. Stifling hot.
Why isn't he in a deck cabin?
You ask me that, Miss Lane. You might as well ask me why they have a doctor aboard like Vadlo. Now, here we are. Step right in.
Thanks. Margot, you better wait here.
All right, Lamont.
Well, help me. Victor, what in thunder are you doing out of bed?
I'm not going to stay down here below any longer.
Now, you get back in bed.
Oh, I ship to do my trick like everybody else. I'm going to work.
Now, just a minute, son. You're in no condition to do any work.
Oh, I tell you, I've...
Now, take it easy.
Steady, boy. Back in bed with you.
Easy now. There we are.
They'll never ship me again. I fell down on my first voyage.
Don't worry about that. You've got a man-sized job getting well on your hands.
Victor, this here's Mr. Cranston, and... come in, Miss Lane.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Cranston and Miss Lane, Victor. They're passengers. Come down to see how you're doing.
Do you mind if I look at your arm, Victor?
No, sir.
What? No bandage? Say, that's a nasty wound.
Why, the arm must be swollen more than twice its normal size.
Tell me, Victor, how did it happen?
Well, it started from a vaccination I got in Hav. A bit of infection set in. Well, I didn't think it was much, but Dr. Vadlaw, he said it was serious.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Cranston.
Yes, Victor.
I won't lose my arm, will I? Oh, I can't do that, sir. I've got to work. You see, there's somebody depending on me. That's why I came to see, because there wasn't any work at home.
Oh, Victor, don't lose your courage.
Oh, it's my own fault I'm in this mess. I was warned against Vadlaw.
Warned? By whom?
Newt Johnson. He told me not to let Vadlaw touch me.
Johnson? The man who struck the doctor. Oh, I see.
Oh, Mr. Cranston. How do you do, Miss Lane?
How do you do, Captain?
You've met Dr. Vadlaw, I believe.
Yes, Dr. Vadlaw, I've met before.
How do you do?
Captain, I don't think this boy should be kept down here. I'll be glad to pay for a deck cabin.
Oh, that won't be necessary. I had no idea he was so badly off. I'll have him moved at once.
Just a minute, Captain. I think I should be consulted in any plans that affect my patient.
Well, surely, Doctor, you don't object to his being moved out of this hot, humid place.
I wouldn't object, Miss Lane, if I thought it was best for the patient.
Will you refuse to allow the boy to be moved?
Until my judgment dictates otherwise, yes.
Dr. Vadlaw, I think that you're...
Margo, please. I think we'd better leave the doctor with his patient. Come along.
Oh, Lamont, I'm so angry I could... Well, it's a good thing I'm not a man. I can't see why
Margo,
that...
Margo, please. This is a time to keep the head cool and the heart warm. I don't understand why Vadlaw sewed that wound up in the first place. It's an infection. It should be allowed to drain.
Well, something's got to be done. The boy's in great danger, Lamont.
Margot, I have a feeling Newt Johnson knows something. Perhaps the Shadow can find the answer.
What are you going to do?
Have a little tete-a-tete with Seaman Johnson. In the meantime, Margot, I want you to go to the wireless room and send a message for me.
You mean I don't see you?
I'm standing right here in front of your cell.
I see nobody. Somebody play trick on me.
You can't see me, Johnson. You can only hear me.
What? You're a ghost, yeah?
I am not a ghost, Johnson.
If you're not ghost, why I can't see you?
Because I have the power to make myself invisible.
Yeah? What you want from me?
I'm here to help you. To help young Payne, if I can. I want to know why you attacked the doctor. Why you warned Victor Payne against him.
Because he's butcher. This is not first time he make people suffer.
He treat firemen on Cerebic. Firemen lose leg. He treat Cook and Francis William. Cook lose arm.
That certainly is not a flattering record.
You take that bad. He killed my friend, Doug Olson.
Killed him? How?
Doug have infection in shoulder. He stuck the fool with him and he die. You believe me, this young pain, he die too.
Johnson, I want you to leave this matter entirely in my hands.
Well, you may be smart fellow, Mr. Shadow, but you believe me, you won't be able to do anything. This Victor Payne, he's gone lose arm. May lose life. Hey, no. You see.
By thunder, Mr. Cranston, this is unbelievable.
I don't think you could have it from better authority, Captain.
You had Miss Lane wire the inquiry an hour ago, you say?
Yes. And there you have the answer.
George Badlaw refused license to practice because of failure to qualify in ability and character. Oh, there's certainly no disputing this.
You see, Captain, Badlaw's papers are forgeries. He has no right to practice.
Yeah, he must know we're onto him. We can't find him anywhere aboard. We've searched the ship from top to bottom. There's only one answer. He's gone over the side.
Well, my greatest concern right now is young Payne, Captain. If something's not done at once, he'll lose his arm.
Well, I've ordered the boy moved to a deck, Captain. What else can we do? There's no doctor aboard.
Well, perhaps you could transfer the boy to another ship.
I'm afraid not. We could never put him over the side in a sea like this. It's too rough.
I see. Captain.
Yes?
At least we can get some advice. There must be a liner in our vicinity with a competent physician aboard.
Perhaps. Miles.
Aye, sir.
What was the last ship you logged?
I raised the Empress Marguerite about an hour ago, sir.
Where does she lie?
Dead on our course, sir.
Good. That's our ship, Cranston. I know the doctor aboard. Good man.
Contact him. In the meantime, I'll see what I can do for young Payne.
All right, Miles. Get Dr. Sprowls on the Empress Marguerite. Emergency.
Oh, Lamont, come in.
How's the boy, Margot?
Well, he's much more comfortable in this deck cabin. But he goes off into a coma every once in a while.
The pain must be horrible. Look at the way his face is contorted.
What are we going to do, Lamont?
Well, the captain's trying to contact a ship to get some advice from a physician.
I'm afraid we'll need more than advice.
Oh, Captain Blair. Any luck?
Yeah, I've got an answer from the Empress Marguerite.
Good, let's hear it.
Description of boy's arm indicates immediate operation imperative. In absence of licensed physician, suggest job be done by ship's officer or responsible layman.
How can that...
Now, wait, Morgan.
We'll direct operation with complete instructions via shortwave radio. Answer at once.
What does he mean, he'll direct the operation?
We'll have to set up a two-way radio so we can talk with the operator while the boy's on the table. Captain, that boy's life is in your hands.
In my hands?
When you're the ranking officer, you'll have to operate.
Oh, no, Cranston. That's out of the question. I don't know the first thing about surgery.
Lamont, why don't you do it?
What?
You've had some medical training.
But I've never done anything like that.
You've had medical training? Cranston, you must. For the boy's sake.
That youngster's life is at stake, Lamont. You can't let him down.
Captain. Yes? How long will it take to hook up the shortwave set?
Oh, about 15 minutes.
All right. Tell the Empress Marguerite we'll operate in 15 minutes.
Shortwave all set here, sir.
You ready, Cranston?
Yes, Captain. Margot, how about you?
I'm ready.
Good.
I'll give you the go-ahead, sir, in just a second, as soon as I raise the Marguerite.
As soon as you can. Here, Cranston, I'll put this microphone in front of you so you can talk to Dr. Sproul.
Thank you.
Mr. Cranston.
Yes, Victor.
Could I have a cigarette?
If it'll steady your nerves, certainly.
That'll help, sir.
Here you are.
Thanks.
Here's the light.
Now I'm all set.
Victor, this is going to be a bit of an ordeal. You'll have to listen to all the details of the operation coming from the loudspeaker.
I can take it, sir.
You're sure, Victor? You want me to do this? You'll trust me?
Trust you, sir. I'll bet on you.
Yes, you are. Stand by. It's yours, Captain. Take it.
All right. Hello. Empress Marguerite?
Hello. Granada. Sproul speaking.
Well, this is Captain Blair, Doctor. We're ready on this end.
Good. Who's going to operate?
One of my passengers. I'll introduce him. Lamont Cranston, Dr. Sproul.
How do you do, Doctor?
Hello, Mr. Cranston. You've got quite a job on your hands, so let's get on with it.
Good luck, Lamont.
Thanks, Margo.
First, let me take a quick check on your setup. You've got a good, sharp scalpel, I suppose?
Yes, Doctor.
Plenty of towels?
A few dozen.
Any way of sterilizing them?
Baking them with hot irons.
Good. Gauze?
Yes.
Roll it into small strips about the size of cigarettes.
Margo, will you take care of that, please?
Yes, Lamont.
You'll need those to drain the wound. Now, the disinfectant?
Iodine.
Anesthetic?
I'm using a local, Doctor. I know how to administer that. I've done it before.
Just one thing more.
Yes, Doctor.
Will you confirm all my instructions as I give them so there'll be no chance of misunderstanding?
Yes, Doctor.
All right. Now then, you say you know how to administer the anesthetic?
Yes, Doctor. Hypo's all ready.
All right. First, the alcohol.
Alcohol, Margo.
Here, Lamont.
Ready, Doctor.
Swab the arm.
Right.
He was good.
Hypo.
Hypo. Victor. It's going to hurt but just a second, so brace yourself.
Let her go, sir.
All right.
Oh.
Good boy. There you are, Doctor.
Iodine.
Iodine.
Paint the entire area.
Right. Entire area of infection.
Make an incision about 2 inches long, passing through the most infected area. That's all there is to it.
All right, Doctor.
Don't move anybody.
What
is this?
I have a patient here, and I'm not going to let any meddler usurp my authority.
You have no authority here.
I hold my authority right in my hand, Captain. And unless you do as I say, this gun's liable to start making a noise.
Mr. Cranston, Mr. Cranston.
Just a moment, Doctor. We've had an interruption.
We've got to get on with this operation.
How are you doing, Doctor?
The delay is liable to prove fatal. We can't let this
go. Get away from that radio, Padlock. Get away!
Now we'll get on with the operation. Without your help.
What do you mean?
I'm still the ship's doctor. I'm justified in taking any measures to protect my patient.
You're a charlatan, Badlaw. A faker. Your papers are all forgeries.
Shut up, Cranston, or I'll kill you. Come on now, all of you. Get out.
Well, Marco, Captain Blair, it looks as though we'll have to leave.
Oh, but Cranston, this man...
I'm sorry, Captain. There's nothing we can do.
Well, if you think I'm going to let that boy undergo an operation...
Please, Captain.
All right.
I'll follow you right out.
What are you waiting for, Cranston? Get going. Take your hand off that light switch. Put on those lights. Fire you. He's gone. There. We won't be disturbed now. Well, Victor, they've all gone. We're alone. Just you and me.
Keep away from me. Keep away. Don't come near me.
Why, Victor... I'm your doctor.
I don't want anything to do with you.
But I want to help you,
Victor. You haven't before?
I'm going to now.
What do you mean?
You have a very bad arm.
Yes, yes, thanks to you.
It'll have to come off. At once.
No, 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 Mr. Cranston. Captain, help me, please.
Well, I can't help you now, Victor. You're going.
No, no.
Take it easy. Just breathe in. Sleeping. Now, Victor, when you wake up, your arm will be gone. Gone.
What was that?
Put down the scalpel, Butler.
What? Ah, that radio, I thought I broke it. Who are you?
I am the Shadow.
The Shadow? Oh, yes, I've heard of you.
Get away from that table. I'm going to finish the operation on the boy's arm.
You a shadow operator? Oh, no, you don't. Not while I can do anything about it.
Put down that scalpel, I say.
After the arm's cut off.
In that case... Ah. Now, Vatalova, I hope you're convinced I'm not all Shadow.
You're some sort of a devil.
Stay where you are. Keep away from this table. I've no time to bother with you.
I can't see you, but I can see you lift those instruments. Put them down.
Small incision.
Don't cut stuff, I say.
Passing through.
Stop or I'll shoot.
Most
you think I can't hit you because I can't see you, and I'll show you.
Still operating, eh? I plugged you, Shadow.
Oh.
Still begging for it, eh? Well, that should finish you. What's that?
Bring the quack up and bring him over the side!
The crew!
Yes, outlaw, the crew, they're coming for you.
They'll never get me.
You've used up four of your bullets.
Only one left, but this time I've missed the last one. Where's Shadow? Here's for the last bullet.
Break the door now, man! Break it!
You're hurt. Them, aren't you bleeding?
Never mind about me. I've got to finish with Victor.
What happened to Badlaw?
Shot himself. Here, Margo, hold the boy's arm while I finish.
All right, men. Thank you both. Badlaw's dead.
Margo. Captain.
Yes?
Look. Under this muscle.
Lamont.
What is it, Cranston?
It's a pure blood ruby.
Embedded in the boy's arm.
Yes. There's the reason for Victor Payne's infected arm. The explanation for Vadlaw's strange conduct. Let me have the scalpel, Margo.
Here you are, Lamont.
Yeah, we'll have to get it out.
Lamont, how did it get in Victor's arm?
It was placed there by Vadlaw.
Why would he do a thing like that?
It was simply a diabolically clever way of smuggling precious stones. Vadlaw was only one in a ring of similar fiends.
By thunder! I never heard of the like.
That's why Vadlaw didn't want to operate until he reached port.
Exactly. He wanted to get the jewel past the customs officials. There. It's out. And this is the end of the ring's mutilating and murdering enterprise. We'll sweep the sea clean of the whole filthy tribe.
Cranston, that shoulder of yours. We've got to take care of it.
We've got to take care of this boy first. Gauze, Margo.
Gauze, Lamont.
Ready with the cotton. Here, Captain, hold the arm while I spread the wound.
All right.
Now, Margo. Cotton. Pack the wound with gauze. Or iodine. Wipe the perspiration from my face, Margo.
Lamont!
Cranston.
Look, Lamont. Here's an article in the newspaper that should give you some satisfaction.
Yes? What is it, Margo?
Listen. Surgery smuggling ring broken. 10 fake doctors taken into custody. Their private hospital raided.
Well, I guess that winds up the case very effectively.
Listen, Lamont. It says that the ring had their own hospital where they extracted the gems from the unsuspecting carriers.
Yes, that was Victor Payne was. An unsuspecting carrier. Well, Victor's none the worse for his experience, and the ring is broken. Badlaw's dead.
Yes, and your wounded shoulder is healing very nicely. The doctor told me this morning that you'd be up and around again in a day or so.
Well, that's good news. I imagine that if I take care of myself, eat the right food, exercise, build myself up, that eventually I'll be in proper condition to take another rescuer at sea.
Program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The Shadow Magazine is on sale at your local newsstand.
The weight of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Ooh, kids! The Shadow returns! Ooh, that was scary. No, that one really was. Wow. You have to admit, though, that operation deserves a hand. Or in this case, an arm, huh? Really? Yes. Now that proves the Shadow really is a cut above the rest, huh? I loved it when the patient was put on the table and then discovered his doctor was a radio operator, huh? Yes. I guess the Shadow just wanted to sew up the case, huh? Like I always say, a stitch in time solves crime, huh? Hey, and what about the mad doctor, though? He was bad medicine, let me tell you. In fact, you could even call him an antibody, huh?
Boy.
He had what I call a bad attitude. You can tell by the way he ran out of patience, huh? But even they should have been suspicious. What sort of doctor offers to pull you through when you're at death's door, huh? Up next, it's Inner Sanctum with Till Death Do Us Part So Scary!
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Sanctum. Welcome through the squeaking door. Well, I hope you've spent a nice quiet week building up your nervous system. You're going to need plenty of red corpuscles to digest tonight's gory little dish. Hmm? What's that? Oh, you'd like to have a recipe. To a small quantity of apprehension, add a pinch of dismay, and cook on a slow fire. Adding dread and panic in appropriate quantities. Then throw in a dose of terror and a whiff of horror. And make it boil, brother. Make it boil.
Mr. Host, not a very appetizing dish.
Well, now, here's a personal question. How would you like to go on a honeymoon? Well, you're going on one whether you like it or not. Because tonight's story is called Till Death Do Us Part. It's an original radio play by Emil Tepperman. And our stars tonight are Ann Shepherd and Larry Haynes. Just look at them. Joe and Nancy Page. Married hardly 5 hours. And parked at the side of the road by the bank of the old mill stream. Whispering sweet nothings to each other, living in a fool's paradise.
Oh, gee, Nancy, it's wonderful to be married to you.
Oh, darling.
Gosh, if the other clerks at Scott's department store could see us now.
I don't want anybody to see us. I just want to be alone with you, Joe, for the rest of my life.
Gosh, baby, I hope you don't mind spending a honeymoon in a tourist cabin instead of a swanky hotel.
No, I love it this way. The stream rushing past, the moonlight shining on the bridge, and the woods all around. Joe, look, there's another car. They're parking on the bridge.
Uh-huh. Oh, he's turning his headlights out, too. You think they've got privacy. Guess they can't see us parked here.
Joe, look. That couple's getting out of the car.
Yeah. We're walking the bridge, I guess.
Hmm?
Wonder if this is their wedding night, too.
Oh, that's a gorgeous couple. Joe?
What?
That couple, they're acting very strange.
They're having an argument.
Joe! Look, look what he just took out of his pocket.
Holy mackerel. A gun.
He's pointing the gun at her. Joe! He shot her.
Holy mackerel. It can't be. It must be a gag of some kind.
But you saw the flashes when he fired the gun. And see how still she lies. Her body crumbled at his feet.
Yeah. He's picking her up. I bet he's going to throw her in the...
No, don't let him!
Nancy, you pushed my hand down on the horn. He sees us.
He's coming across the bridge.
Heading for us.
What?
He knows we witnessed the murder. He's got to kill us.
Well, quick, stop the car.
We'll stay here before I can turn the car around.
Then what do we do?
Oh, we'll duck into the woods. Come on. Quick. Let's run.
My high heels. I can't run
you
fast.
You've got to. Here, through these bushes. Get behind this tree.
He's getting out of his car. Joe, he has the gun. He means to kill us.
clear. Nancy, we've got to run for our lives. Here, take my hand. Come on.
He's shooting at us.
Run, Nancy. Faster.
I can't go much farther.
We can't stop. He's close behind us.
They're gaining on us.
No. Nobody's still after us.
Oh, let's stop. Rest.
No, no. Not yet. I saw headlights up ahead. Maybe there's a road. If we can only make it.
John, true. I can't go anymore.
Nancy, look. Through the trees. The road. Come on, one last sprint. Here's the road. Let's stop.
I never thought we'd make it. Is he still after us? Coming through the woods?
I don't know. We'll stop the first car that comes along. Oh, now take it easy, baby.
I was just thinking of that poor girl lying dead on the bridge.
Our wedding night, too. Here comes the car. I'll stop it.
It isn't stopping.
He went right by.
Joe.
What?
I think I hear something behind us. In the woods.
Oh, it's only the wind and the trees.
Suppose he should suddenly stop. Step out of these woods with his gun.
Maybe he gave up. Maybe he went back to take care of that body.
Our car is there. With our marriage license in the glove compartment and the receipt Mrs. Swenson gave us for the cabin.
Yeah. He'll know all about us. Who we are, where to find us.
And we don't know a thing about him except his face. The face of a murderer.
Come on, Nancy. I think we better start walking. We've got to get to the cabin and phone the police.
How much further, Jill?
Just around the bend.
Oh, I'd like to lie down and sleep right here on the road.
Fine way to spend a wedding night.
Darling, look. We're there. Swenson's cabin. See, they're all dark. Everybody's asleep.
We'll wake up Mrs. Swenson. Use her phone.
Jill!
What's the matter?
Look, in front of our cabin.
What? Hey, that's our car.
The murderer must have come here by another road to wait for us.
I don't see anybody around.
Maybe he's in the car.
Wait here, I'll go and see.
No, no, Joe, you're kidding.
No, don't worry. We both saw his face. He's got to kill us both. Don't you see, baby, if I go over there alone, he won't choke till he knows where you are.
But, Joe,
now, take it easy, will you? You stay back here in the shadows. It'll be all right. Car's empty.
Maybe he's hiding somewhere close by.
No, he must have skipped out.
Why did he bring our car back?
Well, he wanted to get away from the bridge. Don't you see, he must have dumped that girl's body in the river and then he took our car away, no trace.
Joe, I'm scared. Maybe he's hiding inside the cabin waiting for us.
No, he'd be a sap. One shot would wake up all the people in the other cabins, Mrs. Swenson, too. You know, he'd never get away with it. Come on, we're going in our cabin, get cleaned up, then we'll use the phone. Switch is right here. There. See? There's nobody hiding. Holy mackerel.
What is it?
Oh. Over there. On the bed.
What?
Body with her face shot away just like we saw on the bridge.
Well, now let's get back to that cabin. See how Joe and Nancy are getting along with their uninvited visitor, the corpse in their cabin. Yes, it's one of those times when two's company and three's a shroud. I wonder what they're going to do with her, don't you?
Now, listen, Nancy, we have to take this over. We're in a jam. For the love of Pete, Nancy, this is no time to faint.
Oh, darling, it's awful. Her face shot away.
Don't look at her. Here, here, sit down.
Joe, what'll we do?
I don't know. I don't know. I have to think. Oh, on our wedding night, to have a thing like this happen.
Why did he leave her here?
To put us in a spot. The cops will never believe our story now. They'll think we killed her.
We? But, Joe, we never saw her before in our lives.
Nancy, we've got to get rid of her.
What?
Sure, we've got to take her back. Back to the bridge and dump her right back on the murderer.
No, no.
It's the only thing we can do. Suppose the cops come here and find her. They'll grill us for hours. They'll hold us for the inquest. It might take a week, 2 weeks. A fine way to spend a honeymoon in jail.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Sure, we've got to do it. We've got to take her back.
But that means we have to lift her up and carry her.
I'll carry her, baby. But you'll have to help.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
You've got to, honey.
What must I do?
Now, look. You go out and get the back door of the car open, and I'll bring her out.
Joe. Joe, they'll find us here with the body.
Quick. Throw the blanket over. I'll see who it is.
No, I can't go near
her. Do as I say. Quick.
I'll try. Give me a minute.
Who is it?
It's I, Mrs. Swenson.
Mrs. Swenson. Have you got it covered up?
The blanket. It's too short.
Just a minute, Mrs. Swenson. Her feet are sticking out. Get those clothes out of the valise. Throw them on top of her.
That's the best I can do.
All right, sit on the bed in front of her feet.
Please hurry, Mr. Payne.
Coming, Mrs. Swenson. Everything okay, Nancy?
Yes, but I feel faint.
Don't bite your lip. Do anything, but don't faint now. Good evening, Mrs. Swenson.
Good evening, Mr. Page. I hope I'm not intruding. I saw your light, so I knew you weren't asleep yet.
Oh, we were just going to sleep. Weren't we, Nancy?
Yeah. I should have thought you'd be asleep long ago. See, I brought you a jug of my own homemade apple cider. I'll put it right here, and some glasses, too.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Smith.
That's awfully nice of you.
Yeah.
Oh, not at all. It's so nice to have a honeymoon couple. I wanted to do it earlier, but my heart was bothering me. I have a bad heart, you know.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry to hear that, Mrs. Swenson. Well, thank you. Thank you for everything.
Well, aren't you going to try my cider? I thought you'd like to drink a toast.
Well, we're not very thirsty right now, Mrs. Swenson. Are we? Are we, Nancy?
No. Oh, no. Of course not. Now I'll run right along and leave you both strictly alone.
Yes. Well, good night, Mrs. Swenson, and thanks again.
Good night, Mrs. Swenson.
Oh, you poor dear. You look all tuckered out sitting there on the bed. I bet you don't even know how to make up a bed. Here, I'll make it up for you.
Oh, no.
Well, it's the least I can do. Now, you just sit over here on the chair.
No, please don't. Oh, why?
Well, she means, please don't bother.
Well, it's no bother at all. Oh, now look at all those clothes all thrown around.
Oh! What's this?
We can explain everything, Mrs. Swenson.
Shot! He's been shot in the face. Murder! No. Please, Mrs. Swenson, it's not what you murdered. Murder!
No.
You're no honeymoon.
No.
You're murderous.
No, we...
Please.
Stop that.
Let me go.
Shut up.
Enrico.
Stop that.
Joe, the clouds are bothering her. Joe, your hands.
I'm just trying to stop her yelling. Please, Mrs. Swenson. Stop.
What happened?
I don't know. She just went limp and slid down on the floor. Mrs. Swenson, are you all right? Mrs.
Joe. What is it?
She's dead.
Joe. You killed her.
mother's hurt to death.
I'm a murderer. Me, Joe Page, a killer. We started out on a honeymoon, and now I'm a murderer. I'm a murderer, isn't that a laugh?
Joe!
I was kind of dizzy for a second.
Joe, please. Please, darling. You look like a ghost. You're trembling.
Nancy, what are we going to do?
Are you sure she's dead?
Yeah. Look at her face. Sure she's dead. And that one on the bed. We're in a jam, Nancy. In a jam.
Darling, I wish I were dead, too.
They'll hold us for murder, Nancy.
But it was an accident. You didn't mean to kill Mr. Swenson.
Yeah, but how will we ever prove we didn't kill the other one, too? We'll never be able to find that guy with the black robes, so the cops will pin the rap on us.
Don't take me out of here. I can't stand it. Her on the bed, Mrs. Swenson on the floor. Let's go way far away.
You mean run away?
Yes. Anything, but let's not stay here. I won't go to jail. I won't. Take me away.
Yeah, sure. Sure, we'll get out. We'll keep going. Nobody knows our names. They can't trace us.
No.
Come on, get the clothes packed.
Joe, I can't close this valise.
I'll close it. You get the other one packed. And don't forget anything. Look under the bed.
Yeah.
Be sure we don't leave a single thing behind.
No, we mustn't leave anything behind. Everything's packed, Joe. Hurry now. Hurry.
Yeah, all right. I'll take the bags. You put the lights on.
Yeah.
Snap the catch. We'll lock the door. Hey.
What? What's wrong?
I just saw it. A fingerprint. All over the place.
What do we do?
We have to wipe them off. Off everything. Grab a towel. We'll wipe everything in sight.
Wiped everything, Joe, I think.
The bedstead?
Yeah.
The bathroom? The faucet?
Yeah.
Yeah. The doorknobs? Dressers?
Yeah, yeah.
And the water pitcher?
Yes.
Well, I guess that's all. Let's go.
Joe! Huh? Cider jug. We didn't wipe the cider jug.
Well, we didn't touch
it. I'll wipe it anyway.
Okay. Snap it up, will you?
Okay.
All right. Come on. Oh, I'll feel better in the car out on the road.
Got anything?
I don't know. I can't think. I'm numb all over.
Oh, my darling.
Oh, mackerel, Nancy. I'm a murderer. A killer running away. Oh, we shouldn't have done it. We shouldn't have run away.
Gil, it's not as if you killed her on purpose. It was an accident.
Nancy, do you realize you're married to a murderer?
No. No, it wasn't murder.
It was so easy. So easy to kill. I never thought it could be so easy. All I did was to hold my hand over her face.
Joe, please.
What time is it?
It's almost 2:00. We've been driving for an hour.
Got a cigarette?
Yeah.
I think there are some in the glove compartment.
Yeah, I'll get them. Joe.
What?
Our marriage life. It's gone.
What? You sure?
It's gone, Joe. It was right here.
The murderer. He took it.
Why? Why would he take our marriage license?
I don't know. I can't think straight anymore.
Joe, he knows our names. He knows everything about us. Darling, there's no use running away. He knows who we are. We'll always be at his mercy.
Oh, I feel all in. I can't drive anymore. I've got to rest and think.
Pull up at the side of the road. Look, see? Up ahead, a gas station close to the night. We'll park there.
Yeah.
wish I could sleep for 100 years.
My poor Joe. Here, put your head on my shoulder.
First night of our honeymoon. And maybe the last.
I fell asleep, too. Oh, it's chilly.
Yeah. We should have closed the windows. Gee, honey, you look pretty with your hair mussed up. Gosh, your hands are cold. Here, let me warm them.
This is our first morning together.
Yeah. Yeah. But this isn't the way I used to dream about it. Oh, baby, how'd we ever get in a mess like this? We're back where we were last night, in the same jam. Nothing's changed. Those two corpses still in the cabin. What'll we do?
Darling, let's not think about it for a while yet. Let's go find a place for breakfast. Our first breakfast together. After that, we'll go back to thinking about it. But at least let's have those few minutes of a sort of stay of execution.
Yeah. Yeah, baby, okay.
Look, there's the place. A diner.
Yeah, but I haven't got much appetite.
What we both need is something hot.
You think there's an alarm out for us yet?
Darling, let's not think about it.
No other customers inside, please.
Good morning. You've been traveling all night?
Yeah, all night. Some scrambled eggs, please.
Right. That'll take a few minutes.
That's all right. We'll wait.
Well, I'll turn the radio up for you.
Station with the early morning local news. During the night, death came to Mrs. Hannah Swenson, whose tourist homes are located on the Bay Park Highway. Mrs. Swenson's body was discovered by Oscar Jansen, the handyman, who was awakened by the sound of a car driving away from one of the cabins. Investigating, he found Mrs. Swenson lying on the floor of cabin 3. Dr. Macklin, who was summoned immediately, announced that Mrs. Swenson had died of a heart attack.
Heart attack, and I didn't kill her. He didn't say anything about the other body. Shh, quiet.
The state police are anxious to contact a couple who occupied the cabin and who apparently left during the night. They are traveling in a blue four-door sedan, license number 8N1637. Their names are not known as yet, but if they should hear this broadcast, they are requested to call at the state police barracks.
Let's get out of here, Nancy.
Hey, what about your
aunt? Can't wait. We're in a hurry. Come on, Nancy.
What does it mean? Why didn't you mention the other body?
The trap, honey. Get it? They're keeping mum about the girl's body.
No, Joe, I don't think so.
Well, what else could it be? We left two bodies there, didn't we?
Darling, stop the car, please. Maybe the real murderer was waiting close by all the time. Maybe after we left, he went in and took the girl's body away again.
I don't like it. I want to get away from here, far away.
Joe, wait. Look, darling, don't you realize you're not a murderer? You didn't kill Mrs. Swenson. It was a heart attack.
That's what they say. I say it's a trap. Let's get moving. Come on.
No, it's too late. Look.
State troopers.
Yeah, he's coming right over here.
Sure, he's got this license number. Well, baby, I guess our honeymoon's over.
Are you Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Page?
Yeah.
You're Joe Page?
Yeah, that's right.
And you, lady, you're Nancy Page?
Yes.
Well, then, this belongs to you.
What? What is it?
Take it.
Marriage license.
What? Where'd you get it?
One of our men happened to be cruising down by the old mill stream last night. Saw a fella get out of a roadster on the bridge carrying a girl's body. Fella dumped the girl over the rail and our man went after him. They had a gunfight and the fella got a slug through the heart. When we went through his car, we found this. On the back of it, you notice he wrote your license number.
Then you got the murderer?
Sure did. But we didn't recover the body of the girl. It was carried downstream. May take several days to find it.
Then we're not wanted for anything?
Well, the other folks were in Mrs. Swenson's cabin last night. We figure you left in a hurry. Kind of embarrassing to have a thing like that happen on your honeymoon, huh? Can't blame you.
Oh, we're free to go on our honeymoon?
Just come down to the barracks and sign a statement, and then you can be on your way.
Would you mind, officer? Just a few minutes. We want to go back in the diner for a honeymoon breakfast.
Say, what's going on here? Two measly murders. And a happy ending. I was hoping Joe and Nancy would end up in a cell with a warden asking them what they wanted for their last meal. What do I get instead? A wedding breakfast. The crowd down at the morgue are going to laugh at me for this. It won't be their last laugh either. No, they had that already.
Fooled you, didn't we? I'll bet you expected Joe and Nancy to come to a bad end. It's too bad Nancy had to be framed for murder, but we just couldn't resist framing her. She is as pretty as a picture. And, oh, yes. Would you care to hear our recipe for eliminating crime? Well, it goes like this. To prevent a murder, you must commit the murderer before he commits the murder. Think that over for a while, and then you'll be ready to murder someone. Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at the same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror.
Kids, that was too scary, just too scary. Till death do us part. Wow, marriage, ooh. Reminds me of the poem, Needles and Pins, Needles and Pins. When a man marries, his trouble begins. Really? That sure was the case tonight, let me tell you. In fact, the ring bear nearly became the paw bear, huh?
Boy.
Yeah, like... I guess that would make the newlyweds the newly deads, huh?
Boy.
And then the back of the car would have read, just buried, huh? No, really, as it was when he took her inside, he had to carry her across the threshold of death, huh? Remember the deceased in the room? Really? Lying there on the wedding bed? I mean bed, huh? Even Miss Swanson got in there on the scene, providing herself as something old, the cider as something new, the jug was something borrowed, and by the time they left, Miss Swanson was something blue, huh? I bet they never would have honeymooned if they thought their marriage license would turn into a license to kill, huh? Now with the policing on the act, it really will become a trial marriage, huh? Really? Next is Ed McMurray in suspense with train robbery so scary.
Suspense. My name is Walter Beaumont. I'm 42 years old. I have no prominent marks or features that would distinguish me from any other plain, ordinary citizen. I live with my wife, Bess, in Oakland. If you saw me walking down the street, you wouldn't give me a second glance. The details of my appearance are very important. You see, they're what convinced me that I could execute a great train robbery. Bess and I have been married for 16 long and uneventful years. The year before we were married, I went to work for a toy manufacturing firm. I've been down there ever since and am now making $62 a week. 16 years ago, I had a lot of dreams and some ambition. But the necessities and responsibilities of our everyday living have cost me most of those dreams and what little ambition I had.
Walter, did you remember to pay the rent?
Yes, Bess.
Installment on the washing machine?
Uh-huh.
What about the payment on the car and the box spring and mattress?
Those too, Bess.
Oh, wished we had a little money left over. At least enough to buy you a new white shirt. I've already turned the collars on the only three you own. Well, maybe we can get you one next month, if we're lucky.
If we're lucky. For 16 years, it's been the same thing, over and over again. A new white shirt, if we're lucky. A new pair of hose, if we're lucky. The same thing, it never changes. Each night at 5:30, I drive up and park in front of a tarnished white stucco house where we've lived for the last 8 years, and I know that nothing has changed. But tonight when I got home, there was a change. A happy change. Some relief. A new face. The face of a visiting long-lost relative. Cousin Eugene.
Yes, sirree, Cousin Bess. That's just about the best meal I've had in a long, long time.
Well, I'm glad you like it, Eugene.
One of these days we'll have you over for a real feast, Eugene.
As soon as Walter's ship comes in.
Oh, I'm a plain man. The simple things in life are good enough for me.
Not for Walter. He's got ideas high and mighty.
No, not anymore.
He's got a dream world all his own.
Well, Cousin Bess, we all do a little dreaming now and then. Cigar, Cousin Walter?
Oh, yes, thanks. Thanks, Eugene.
Here's a light.
That tastes good.
Yeah. There's nothing like a cigar after dinner, say I. It's the finishing touch.
Do you have any definite plans for the future, Eugene?
Well, Walter, I think I'm just about ready to settle down.
Well, that's good to hear.
I'd like to buy me a farm somewheres and maybe raise some chickens. Always did like chickens.
Mm. You know, I think I would have done something like that one day if...
Go ahead, Walter. Say it. If you'd ever had the money.
Well, that's my problem, folks. Money. You gotta have money to buy a farm, and right now I don't have any.
Well, that's a shame.
Say, speaking of money, you ever been up to Reno, Nevada, Walter?
No, I've never been there.
We don't get to go to too many places, Eugene. Seems like we always have something else more important to do with Walter's vacation money.
Mm. Well, you've never seen so much money in all your life as there is in Reno.
I'll bet it's an exciting town, all right?
Oh, it is. Just about one of the most exciting towns I've ever been in. Yes, sir. Lots of excitement. Lots of money.
I guess our type of people would never get up to a city like Reno.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Cousin Walter. They get all types of people up in a city like Reno, all types. You see, people figure there's money to be had there, and money attracts all kinds of people.
I often wondered what Walter'd do if he had a lot of money.
He'd be an interesting man to watch.
Him and all his dreams.
Yeah, they have all types up there. Rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief.
What did you say, Eugene?
I said rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief.
Yes. Yes, that's what I thought you said. And then Cousin Eugene gave me one of those long, lingering, meaningful looks. Then he leaned back in his chair, smiled, inhaled deeply on his cigar, blew the smoke out in a thin stream and washed it as it fanned up toward the ceiling. Eugene had made some kind of a decision, and it concerned me. It concerned me very much. The following morning, about 11:30, Eugene called me at the office. He told me he wanted to see me on my lunch hour. He said he had something very important that he wanted to talk over with me, and could I meet him? I met him at 12:05 in front of the ferry terminal. It was not too long a ferry boat ride over to Richmond, and I figured I could be back to work on time. I'll just eat my lunch while you go ahead and talk, Eugene. Is that all right?
Oh, sure. Go right ahead, Cousin Walter. Best fix your lunch every day?
Oh, yeah. Every day, as far back as I can remember. You'd be surprised how much money it saves.
Mm-hmm. Walter, what would you do if I gave you one half of, say, $25,000?
Excuse me, for a minute, I thought you said $25,000.
I did.
What are you talking about, Eugene?
Well, you're a dreamer, so am I. There's only one way to make our dreams come true. We have to buy them, Cousin Walter, with money. That's why I've picked you.
Picked me?
Last night at the dinner table, I said there was a lot of money in Reno, Nevada.
That's right, you did.
Now, some of this money stays in Reno, and some of it goes elsewhere. Do you follow me?
No, not quite.
Well, some of it goes to banks, like banks here in Oakland and San Francisco.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Now, how does it get to these banks? Well, some of it they drive, some of it they fly, and some of it they load on the mail car of a train. You follow me?
Go ahead, Eugene. Go ahead.
The train they load it on leaves the city of Reno every Thursday morning at 11 o'clock. It arrives in San Francisco at 4:30 in the afternoon. Do you follow me now?
Yes.
After the train leaves Reno, it passes through a place called Soda Springs at 1:50. Then there follows a stretch of about 20 minutes before it passes a place called Dutch Flat, a stretch of nothing but lonely, dry desert.
Go on, Eugene.
And
go on.
If one gentleman was to get on the train in Reno and another gentleman was to drive a car to a deserted junction in between Soda Springs and Dutch Flat,
the train could be stopped, the money taken off, and the gentlemen well on their way before the authorities could be warned.
Why, Cousin Walter, do you realize what you've just suggested?
Yes. Yes, Eugene, I've just suggested that we rob a train. The ferry boat pulled into the Richmond Landing and Eugene got off. As he stepped down the gangplank, he turned around, smiled, and waved at me and disappeared into the crowd. The following day at work, I had a hard time trying to concentrate on a new shipment of toy atomic tanks we'd gotten in. Right after lunch, the phone on my desk began to ring. I let it ring a couple of times. I was almost afraid to pick it up. Afraid that it might not be Eugene. Hello?
Hello, Cousin Walter?
Yes.
Done much thinking about that matter we discussed?
Yes, I have. But, Eugene, I was thinking, how can just the two of us...
Oh, it's very simple. I've worked for weeks on this plan. You must have complete faith in me.
Oh, I do, Eugene, I do. But what about Bess? How will I explain it to her?
Oh, now you just leave that to me.
Yes, but eventually
you can tell her. And, Cousin Walter...
Yes?
What's more, I know she'll understand.
Begins. It's the kind of a thrill that comes once in a lifetime. When I was just a small boy, I had play-acted it out many times, but now it was a reality. I was going to rob a train of an estimated $25,000. We decided on a date. The robbery would take place 2 weeks from the following Thursday. That would give us ample time to prepare everything. And every day on my lunch hour, we would go over our plans, step by step.
Now, the baggage car is in between the regular car and the mail car. There are two guards in the mail car, one man in the baggage car. Now, once we get past the man in the baggage car, our problem is solved. But timing is the most important thing, Cousin Walter.
Absolutely. I realize that, Eugene. It must be timed to the split second.
As you see, it takes 10 minutes to get to the junction where the man in the automobile should be waiting.
10 minutes, right.
The emergency cord should be pulled about 30 seconds before the junction is reached. No sense to upset the passengers. Now, what about your job, Cousin Walter? Will they let you take a week off?
Oh, I'm sure they will. Sure, they'll let me off. But I'm still worried about Bess, Eugene.
Oh, now don't you worry about her. I'll talk to Bess. You just leave it to me. I'll talk to her.
And he did. He wove Bess around his finger as if she'd been putty. By the time he was through with her, she was begging me to take a week off and go somewhere. We'll find the money to pay for the trip somewhere, she said. But when Eugene suggested he'd finance the trip, that was the clincher. He told Bess he was going to take me up to the Hillary Lodge at Lake Tahoe for some fishing. Only he didn't finance the trip, I did. With the $178 I drew out of our savings account at the bank. We needed money for our hotel room in Reno, the train ticket we had to buy, and for the gun we needed. The rest of the week went fast. And then it was Friday night and we were ready to leave. Eugene was waiting out in my car while I was finishing packing.
Oh, Walter.
Now, look, Bess, it's only for a week.
I know, but... Well, here, Walter. Here are your other two shirts. You want to look nice and neat. You put them in the suitcase.
Fine. There. Well, I guess I'm all set. I better hurry.
Walter, you will take care of yourself.
Oh, of course I will, Bess. Now, don't you worry. I'll be all right. Well, all set, Eugene.
Oh, good.
Oh, Eugene.
Yes, Cousin Bess?
You take care of my Walter. Where'd you say you were staying?
The Hillary Lodge. It's near the lake.
Oh. Oh, Walter.
Now, look, Bess. If I don't write, please don't get worried. Promise me?
Yes, I promise.
Well, goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Walter. Gene, take care and have a good time.
Bye.
Well, we're on our way, Eugene.
Yep.
You know, the next time I drive down this street, I'll be a rich man.
Yep.
People like Bess are wrong, Eugene.
Wrong?
Yeah. Who says dreams don't come true? Eugene and I arrived in Reno, Nevada, late Friday night. When we got to Reno, we registered in one of the nicer hotels and stayed there for most of the following 3 days, just going out for our meals. On Monday, we left Reno for a short while and drove to the junction about 13 miles from Soda Springs. Eugene pointed out all the landmarks. This was where the train was to be stopped by pulling the emergency cord. Then on Tuesday, we went down to the train station and bought a ticket for the train leaving Thursday morning. On the way back to our hotel, we stopped in at one of the gambling casinos on the main street, and Eugene started putting nickels in the slot machine. Hey, Eugene, I surely hope you don't throw away your share of the money on things like this.
No need to worry about that, Cousin Walter. I'm for chickens. Well, day after tomorrow is the day.
Yeah, day after tomorrow.
How do you... feel, Cousin Walter?
Well, excited. I don't know how to thank you, Eugene.
Oh, now there's no need for that.
And you're to be commended, too. Your plan is foolproof. Of course, I've never handled a gun before, but don't worry about that.
Did you say gun, Cousin Walter?
Well, yes.
Oh, I'm afraid you won't be handling the gun. I will.
Well, you'll be driving the car. You won't have need for a gun, Eugene.
But the positions are just reversed. I'll be on the train and you'll be in the car.
Me in the car?
Oh, I'm sorry, cousin.
Wait a minute. Eugene, you've missed the most important part of our plan.
Huh?
This could very well cause it to fail.
Well, what are you talking about?
Identification. Our descriptions. Eugene, look at me.
What?
Look at me. All right, now describe me.
Well,
go ahead, describe me. Look at me and describe me.
Well?
Go ahead.
Well, you've got sandy hair.
That's right. And so have 2 million other men. Go ahead.
And? Well, you're just sort of plain looking.
Exactly, Eugene. Exactly. Plain looking. Now, don't you see? When the guards on the train try to describe me to the authorities, they'll have a very difficult time. I certainly have no prominent marks or features to single me out from any other plain, sandy-haired man of 42 years, have I?
You know, Cousin Walter, I believe you've brought up a very important point.
Thank you, Eugene. So, I'll handle the gun and you'll drive the car.
Well, you don't think for 1 minute...
That you're a coward? Oh, no, of course not. Wait a minute, Eugene. Let me pull the lever this time.
Oh, all right. What do you know about that?
You see, Cousin Eugene, we hit the jackpot. Our luck's already begun. We had dinner before we went back to the hotel. When we got back, Cousin Eugene drew out a diagram and we went over the plans again. All I was to take from the mail car was one money bag. Eugene figured that each bag ought to contain about $25,000. And with one half of that, he figured he could start a pretty good-sized chicken farm. It was close to 9 o'clock when Eugene shook me awake. This was the day. My heart was already starting to beat faster. I took a shower and shaved and got dressed. I put on my last clean white shirt. At breakfast, we went over our plan for the final time. Then we checked out of our hotel, put the bags in the car, and drove down to the station.
Don't forget to put the money in your suitcase, Cousin Walter.
Yes.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, a little.
Don't fire the gun, whatever you do. We don't want anyone to get hurt.
Yes, I understand.
Good. Now, remember, you've only got 10 minutes to get back to the mail car and get the money. 10 minutes, that isn't very long. Be sure and keep your eye on your watch.
I will. Keep my eye on my watch. Well,
it's time.
Yes, it's time.
Yes.
I'd better get on.
Well, good luck, Cousin Walter.
Thank you, Eugene. Thank you. This was it. I found my seat and sat down. I was lucky. The seat was in the first car after the baggage car. I wouldn't have far to go. I could feel the perspiration running down my back. I was ruining my last clean white shirt. The 50 minutes before we got to Soda Springs seemed like 50 hours. Then we reached Soda Springs and the train slowed down. There were no passengers at the station, so the train didn't stop. It just slowed down. And then we were on our way again. My 10 minutes had begun. I made my way up to the baggage car, carrying the suitcase. The baggage man was reading a newspaper.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I'd like to check this suitcase.
Forgot to at the station, huh? All right, hand it over here. I'll give you a baggage check.
Thank you.
Feels empty. You sure you wanted a check?
I'd appreciate it if you'd put your hands up.
What is this?
In simple language, a train robbery. Now, let's just start walking that way.
Now, that's the mail car, mister.
I know.
Hey, now, look.
Now, just do as I tell you and no one will get hurt. Walk in front of me. Now, knock and yell for the guards to open the door to the mail car.
They won't open it for me.
Oh, yes, I think they will. Now, knock.
Okay, mister, it's your funeral. Hey, Red, open up.
It's Harold.
What do you want, Harold?
Would you put up your hands?
What are you talking about?
You'll force me to shoot this man. I wouldn't want to do that.
What is this?
A train robbery. Now, I'd appreciate it very much if you gentlemen would back up against that wall. That's it. Thank you. I'll just remove these guns from your holsters. I dislike bloodshed. And I'm afraid you gentlemen might be tempted. There we are. Now, let's see. Oh, yes. Here they are.
You're making a big mistake, mister.
You sound just like my wife. Now, let's see. Cousin said take just one bag. Now, there's so many. I think I'll take two. One apiece. Might as well. One. Two.
How do you expect to get off the train, mister?
The emergency cord will take care of that. Now, I have one more favor to ask of you, sir. Kindly open this side door of the car.
He's going to jump. He's crazy.
No, not just yet. We have about 30 seconds to go. Now, the door, please. Open it. Five, four, three, two, one.
Now!
All right, now remain standing in that corner, both of you. Possibly read our license numbers from this distance.
Doesn't matter. I've got them covered up. Well, how'd it go?
Perfect, Eugene. Perfect. I will admit I had a few bad moments, I guess, but otherwise it was perfect. Look. Look under these dirty shirts.
What? Well, you took two bags. But I told you only to take one.
Yeah, I know, but I figured it'd be easier dividing it with two bags. Didn't even bother to stop for any sort of refreshments. We drove straight through to Sacramento. When we got there, Eugene thought we ought to separate, and we did. I hated to see Eugene go. I'd grown very fond of him in the short time we'd been in business together. But it was a separation that you might call a necessity. When I got back to Oakland, it was almost 4:30. A good time, I thought to myself. I'll have the whole weekend to rest up before I have to go back to work. The house looked the same as I drove up. Maybe now I'll have it painted, I thought to myself. There was a car parked in front of the house. It was probably another salesman. I took the suitcase with my share of the money in it from the back seat and walked up to the front door. I had a wonderful feeling inside.
Why, Walter! Walter, dear!
Hello, Bess.
Oh, Walter, where have you been?
Where have I been? Why... I bet you know very well.
You look a mess, Walter, but I'm so glad to see you, dear.
Well, Bess, what's wrong?
Oh, here, dear. Come on into the living room and sit down.
Well, Bess, I don't understand why you're acting so hysterical. I don't.
Here, Walter, put down your suitcase.
Well, Bess, who are these?
Oh, these gentlemen are from the police station, Walter.
Mr. Beaumont.
The police station? Well, look, Bess, I think I'll go upstairs and get cleaned up a bit.
Oh, there's plenty of time for that later.
Well, Bess, I...
Now, you just tell me where you've been.
Yes, your wife has been worried about you.
Oh, well, look, Bess, I couldn't...
Yesterday, I read in the paper where two men had been drowned at Lake Tahoe. They didn't know who they were. When I tried calling the Hillary Lodge, they told me you and Eugene weren't even registered there.
Oh, I see.
And I just got worried sick, So I called the police station. Oh, Walter, put down that suitcase and tell us what happened.
Well, later, Bess, later.
Oh, look at you, Walter. Your clothes all wrinkled, dirty shirt. Oh, you look a mess.
Well, Bess, I'm sorry you're worried about me like you did.
Well, I'm glad you're home. You won't be getting out of my sight again for a long time, I tell you that.
Mrs. Beaumont, we're very happy that your husband arrived home safely.
Oh, yes, I am too, officer. But look at the condition he's arrived in. Oh, I'll bet he doesn't even have a clean shirt for work Monday morning. Here, Walter, give me that suitcase.
No, wait, give it to me.
I'll just get your dirty shirts out of this suitcase and get them in the washer.
Well, I guess you won't be needing us anymore, Mrs. Beaumont.
Bess, please. Please, Bess, don't open the suitcase. Bess, please.
And so closes tonight's tale of suspense.
Kids, that was scary. No, really, that one was scary. Train robbery. Boy. And he would have gotten away with it, too, if Chief's wife hadn't gone through his dirty laundry. Huh? Oh, boy. I bet by now he's wishing he had laundered his money, huh? But he's lucky they didn't kill anyone at the robbery, or else he could really wind up with a ring around the collar, huh? But they should have rehearsed it all more, though, really. I think they obviously needed more training, huh? No, really, as it is, it sounds like he got a one-way ticket, huh? But who knows? Maybe he'll get time off for good conducting, huh? I'll say this much for the partner, though. The man obviously knows how to engineer a crime, huh? Now, really, if they both weren't so poor, they could have told the court they had no reason to rob. That is, that they lacked a locomotive, huh? Well, it's not the first time someone got railroaded for being from the wrong side of the tracks, huh? Well, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count saying, now you know why trains run on time. It's illegal to hold them up, huh?
No.